The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Meme 3 Songs. I'm Sarah Fagan.
I'm Jenna Million, and this is a podcast where we challenge sexism in the music industry and empower fangirls.
And now it's time to get an artist's perspective, because Meme 3 Songs wouldn't be here without the music. So friends, as you can tell from our intro, and the fact that this is dropping on your feeds on not a Sunday, we're doing something different. We're expanding the idea of what Name 3 Songs can be. We are giving Zach Sang a run for his money, y'all. It is our...
We are trying to be the feminist Zach Sang over here.
I think we can do it. I feel like we have the ability. We have the star power, obviously. And we are just really excited about this because I'm sure, as you guys could tell from like Instagram stories we've posted and TikToks we've posted kind of since we started Name 3 Songs, we've always wanted to figure out a way to like properly interview artists. But as we've kind of grown and changed what we're doing with our Sunday episodes and they've become way more educational, with having all of the journalists and scholars and all that on, we wanted to figure out a way for artists to come on that made more sense for us to be able to talk about their music as well as our shared ethos of like why we have Name 3 Songs and why we care about feminist issues. Because obviously like so many artists do care about these things, but it's also important to talk about their art form and how it might not necessarily always correlate back to those exact themes. So now we have this. We have this new episode that are going to come to you on Wednesdays. They're not going to be a very regular thing, but when they do happen, just know that these artists have our full stamp of approval and we think that they're really awesome and we want to share them with y'all because, as we say all the time, you guys are our friends. And what do with your friends? You share music with each other.
And you send them this episode so they can learn more and educate themselves to be better humans.
Truly, truly, because we did get the absolute perfect guest for our first installment of this interview series. I don't think we could have done better, honestly. Like, this was such a fun interview to do, and I'm just so excited for you guys to get to know Poppy, our guest today, because she's an incredible musician and just like so eloquently puts every thought that I've ever had. And I put like the nutcase that I am. And so it was just a gift to talk to her today. So now that I've gotten you guys excited for our guest today, Jenna, can you introduce everybody to Poppy, please?
Yes, so today we're going to be joined by Poppy Ajuda, who's an artist based in South London with a St. Lucian and British background. Her music is a blend of soul, R&B, jazz, pop, with amazing feminist messages that we're going to get a lot into today. Her releases have seen her rack up over 100 million streams. She's been featured on tracks with Tom Misch and Moses Boyd. She's also gotten support from BBC Radio. She's been featured in publications such as The Evening Standard, Dazed, Vogue, Fader, Complex, Gay Times, and she even appeared on Barack Obama's Best of the Year playlist, which, fun fact. And Poppy has her debut album that has just come out on April 22nd. It's called The Power in Us. It has so many amazing messages within it, and we're going to be getting into all of that today. So, without further ado, hi Poppy, thank you so much for joining us today on Name 3 Songs.
Thanks so much for having me, I'm excited to be here.
Yes, we're so happy to have you, because your album, The Power in Us, came out on April 22nd, and it's such a good album, and the themes of this album work so well with everything that Name 3 Songs is about, so it's really exciting to get to talk to you today about your music and just you and your passion for feminist topics, because your album does dive into a lot of those, and the album as a whole is kind of a political statement, even though it's ridiculous to even say that anything feminist would be a political statement, but you know how the world is, and it really encapsulates what it means to be a woman and all the things we deal with within the 21st century. So what inspired you to incorporate these messages specifically into your lyricism?
That's an interesting question. I don't think I was inspired to make certain songs, as in like to make music, but I don't think anything inspired me to write what I wrote, because, or what I write in general, because it's just talking about my existence and talking about my own story, and hoping that through telling my own story, one, I can become more comfortable with it and shed away any kind of like shame or taboo into relation to myself, but also that by sharing my story, I might be able to connect with others. And I think that's always the driving force when I write a song that is like feminist or critical about certain like social issues or any of that kind of thing. I don't think I'm like, oh, I should like write a song about it. It's kind of more just, I'm feeling this thing and I need to get it out. And that's my way of expressing myself, is through music, and other people have other ways of expressing themselves. But it's very much like a personal thing as well as like a thing for other people.
Yeah. I feel like that makes a lot of sense, because like throughout this whole podcast, it's like you find all these things to yell about and we're like, oh my God, I just can't believe this is happening. And the different ways in which people have figured out how to talk about this thing that, again, like we said, feels like a political statement, but it's really just something you go through in day-to-day life, is just insane. Because I think as you're growing up, these things are happening to you and you don't really understand them until you reach a certain point where you've learned enough where you're like, oh, this is an injustice. Like, what is going on here? Mm. So the next thing that we're both curious about is like, when did you really become aware of feminist issues and that these injustices, and like, what made you passionate to not only write about them and sing about them, but also to like study this?
Yeah, I think I've always been quite aware of, in like a very odd way, like I grew up in a single parent household, so my mum did everything and was very much like, didn't make a thing about that. It wasn't like, oh, I'm a struggling parent. It was like, yeah, I need to knock down a wall. I can knock down a wall. I need to like do the plumbing. I'll do the plumbing. Mm-hmm. Like she had that kind of energy about her. And also even, I didn't come from like a very like sympathetic, coddled childhood. It was like, okay, well, if you want to stay out to 1 a.m, then find your way home. So I just didn't have that kind of energy of like, I need to be like scared of anything. I had to be quite a strong and independent person and woman from a very early age. And so I think what I realized from that is that like, okay, so if I'm out, or I'm experiencing things, or I'm being objectified in certain ways. And for me, that started very young, like especially I feel like for most women, but especially as like a mixed race woman, that like hypersexualization happened from like 13. And so everywhere I'd go, I'd get this kind of attention that was very confusing for me and made me feel very unsafe from a young age. And so, but I still wanted to do things. So I was always aware that it wasn't okay and that it couldn't stop me from doing things. So I feel like that's maybe where the beginnings of my feminist thought started, in terms of like what you can wear out or what you can do or who you can be with or how people will behave, or you know, any of those things. I was kind of always quite hyper vigilant about like safeguarding myself as well. So I think I was always just very aware of like the world and what that oppression was, whether or not I saw it as something I could talk about or like something that I could change. It was more just, this is the way it is, but it's not right and I don't like it, and I'm not gonna just like submit to the way that a woman should be or a girl should be because I'm getting this attention or I'm getting like whatever it was in life. So I think I always had quite an opinionated and I guess like rebellious energy towards myself, and I probably got that from my mum because she didn't give a fuck either, and like she just did whatever she wanted to do. But I think that kind of, you look for ways to understand your world and you look for ways to understand who you are, and I think that came from studying it, or like probably came from writing songs first and writing songs about how I felt and who I was. But I think I didn't really begin writing political songs or songs about the world instead of songs about love until I got to the point where I could articulate myself in that way. I think I kind of struggled with, oh, why do I feel like this? Or like I had a lot of internalized homophobia, so I wasn't out as a queer person for a long time until I went to uni and I kind of realized that I took a gender class that kind of showed me how normal it was to be who I was, or taught me things that I just didn't know existed because I didn't have that support around me when I was growing up from family or friends. And so I think I learned the language I needed to use in order to write songs about these kind of things, because actually my attention had always been on having an opinion about the world or wanting to argue about things that I didn't think were right that someone else said, and we have a discussion about it. My focus has never really been about love songs and getting settled down or getting married. That's never really been something in my mind. But I think it took education and reading and all those kind of things to really step into my power in that sense. I didn't feel like I had the authority to talk on those issues until I read more, and I read feminist work, or I read different theorists. I studied anthropology. That helped me really engage in the world in like a informed way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I love what you say about stepping into your power. You can't get there before you get there. Like sometimes it just takes things to fall into place and to learn certain things or meet certain people or like discover things about yourself to get there. And going back to like the story of like you growing up, the other thing too is like having that awareness of like the world and the awareness of yourself of like, this doesn't feel right. But like a lot of people around you are going to be like, that's just how it is. Or like try to dismiss that or like kind of gaslight you into thinking that that type of behavior is okay from other people. And I think that's like, you know, a lot of women, I mean, speaking from like the American perspective, a lot of especially white women will just ignore racism or like even ignore just like sexist bullshit because they're like, oh, but this is how I've grown up and like this is how I've been taught and like this is just the way the world is. And it's like, it doesn't have to be that way. It's like you're saying, like realizing those injustices and like it doesn't need to be this way. And like I can educate myself and I can find other people who care about these topics and continue to learn and continue to help others learn and like push for a different society.
Yeah, and I think that there is also something in the fact that in order to discover new ways of being or to be accepted by new groups of people outside of the ones that you kind of fall into, you also have to be open to the world and open to that, which isn't something that women are really afforded to do because we're so worried about our safety all the time. We don't really like branch out into new spaces, just talk to random strangers. Like I remember when I was younger and I would have boyfriends or I'd be out with like boyfriend's parents and you would see how like couples interact so much so differently with the strangers. Like an older man will be really like charismatic and like talk to random people or say hello in the morning or like say like talk when you're on a walk or something in the countryside, and the wife just doesn't. The wife just like stays quiet most of the time because I just think women are taught to be so much more like closed and so much more like, oh well, it's better safe than sorry. If you talk to a stranger then you might give them the wrong idea or any of these kind of things. So I think that kind of plays into our conditioning to not branch out, and I think it is used as social control in some way, because if you don't branch out then you don't learn that there are other ways that you can be. And I think even like as a very confident like adult person now, I still feel the pressure of like conforming to gender norms in certain ways all the time. And that's as someone who like, I don't know, I have a level of like personal power being like a musician and an artist to break out of the mold. I think I'm afforded, especially from like family, it's like, oh well, like Poppy's a bit weird because she's an artist. You know what I mean? I'm kind of allowed to like cut off all my hair or dress like a boy, or the things that I would get like criticized for when I was younger. I'm allowed to do it now because it's seen in a different way. But you know, what about all of those women or people that that don't have that space to move? You know, how do they get like their family or their friends to acknowledge like who they are as they are outside of like the constraints of how society thinks we should be?
Literally, like everything you're saying, I'm just like, oh my God, like it's so many good points. And it's like the way you're saying it's just like incredible, because we did this one episode about like the virgin whore complex within like pop stars and how that also just like affects women and girls forever. And how in America, like we have a lot of this like forced kind of like Christian value on us of like virginity and kind of promising your dad you're not just going to give up your virginity, and all these ideas of kind of like men's men's ownership over women and girls, and how like we can't control our bodies. And it's just so insane how much these things are like quote unquote pop culture tropes, and that they always play into roles in music, and that people are very much like trying to step out of that within like the confinements of the box of like what a pop singer is supposed to look like and act like and all that stuff. And like I said, like the virgin whore thing very much stems back to kind of like the Britneys, like the Jessica Simpsons, all of those sort of people. And I guess like when it comes to what you're doing and what you're talking about and selling the image of pop music, how do you deal with that?
That's a big question. I think what's interesting is because I've been an independent artist my whole life, while I've seen other people deal with the pressures of having to conform to a certain idea of like what successful like womanhood is, I have never really had those voices in my ears saying you should be like this. However, I do think that my career path might be different had I conformed from an earlier age. and I do still feel that pressure all the time to conform in certain ways, I think you are more marketable. Like, you're going to offend less people, or you're going to offend less people's idea of what a woman should be. Because I think often...
Literally.
Yeah, like, other women's internalized misogyny means that they don't actually want to see you being different, because that would mean that it would, like, break their idea of what a woman should be. And they maybe are not ready for that change, or ready to realize that that's a construct that they've conformed to. I think it's easier to see, like, gender norms as, like, naturalized things that we don't have a choice about, because sometimes it's easier when you don't have a choice, and it's much more complicated to kind of unpick who it is that you are when you don't follow the kind of more kind of simple trodden route. And so I think it is controversial to behave differently or to look different, and that might be something that not everybody likes, and I think that probably does make you a riskier selling point for a major label or all of those kind of things. And that's something that I've kind of become aware of, which I think when I was younger I didn't even think about, because for me it was always quite a personal journey. Things like cutting off all my hair was quite a personal thing, with trying to, from what I was saying earlier about being quite hypersexualized from a young age, I had very like long light highlights, and it was, I had a very feminine look, and I was kind of this like ambiguous quote unquote exotic woman or girl. And I felt like that played into my hypersexualization by men everywhere. And so I really wanted to see if I could still find myself beautiful without that thing that is so like politicized, like women's hair is so politicized. I mean,
Britney shaving her head, like literally because she didn't want people to control her.
Yeah, exactly. There's so much in hair and the way that women should wear it, and that intersectionally as well, because black women's hair has a whole nother level of politicization. So I think that was something for me that was quite personal. It was like, I want to still like myself. And I think there was something probably part of like my queerness that was part of that as well, with breaking away from what the world might have expected of me. But then it kind of just became part of my look as an artist, because as I grew up as an adult, like I became more of an artist and, you know, it kind of all fed into each other. And I didn't really ever consider that I should conform. It wasn't really a thing in my mind. I'm quite stubborn, so maybe that's why I didn't even consider it. But yeah, I think there is a lot of pressure. And I think as you break more into the commercial space, that pressure becomes bigger. And I'm aware of that all the time. I think body image, the way that you look, like even the face filters, I like myself less when I don't have a filter on my face. And I never thought I would be one of those people because I always saw people put filters on, which make their nose smaller and their eyes bigger and all these things. And I was like, I'd never use that. But then you kind of, you fall into that trap and you realize that you can become obsessed with a version that doesn't exist. And I think that, yeah, it just kind of all goes into each other. And it's something that we have to just constantly check ourselves on. Otherwise, there is no way to be happy in the world. And the world makes it hard enough as it is. But, you know, you have to find a way to accept yourself as you are. And commercial culture doesn't make that easy.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I love so much in what you've just said.
I said a lot of things. Sorry, I went on a tangent.
No, it's perfect. We love a number good tangent.
Yeah, we do. Number one, you said something about cutting your hair and like presenting yourself in like a quote unquote alternative way, and that being part of queer culture. And that kind of just like unlocked something in my brain, because we talked about this in different ways on our podcast. We've talked about like the rebellion and like the way you dress and stuff. But I think that makes a lot of sense. Of it's like people in the queer community feel a certain way inside, and they want to show outwardly like they don't identify with the same way that like the masses identify, or like the structural way that we've been told to identify. So I think that's something really beautiful. But also going back to this idea of boxes, we were able to talk to like a cultural anthropologist the other week on our podcast, and he was making this point that by human nature we like want organization and we like want things to fit into boxes. And it's crazy that like we just continually keep coming back to this conversation of it's like, let people be individuals, let people live their lives, let people express themselves how they want to, but like by human nature we want things to fit into boxes. Like that to me just like so crazy. It's like, can we ever overcome this like human need to categorize things and put labels on people?
I think that that's such a funny point, because I think it's quite confusing, especially in like the modern era, that I think it's amazing to express your identity and be individual. But I think we've moved into an era where individualism is like supreme and our identities are so important, and I love that, but I also feel like we've kind of become obsessed with ourselves and who we are and labeling what it is that we are in order to make sense of it, and it almost becomes more constraining when we do that. And I think there is also a level of like individualist culture comes from neoliberalism, it comes from capitalism, mm-hmm. and it like plays into other things that, you know, what about community, what about being in groups, or like, I don't know, like when you experience traditional like family culture, it's funny, like if I like am having lunch with my like the black side of my family, which is maybe more traditional and more like community based and more like based around like the family unit, sometimes I don't feel like I fit in, because I think, and I'm the youngest in my family, like I think I see myself as too much of an individual. I don't see myself as fitting into their group because I have all these things that make me different. But it also kind of can come across as narcissism sometimes, because I don't want to be seen in the group and I want to be seen as an individual. Yeah. I kind of separate myself and alienate myself from like yeah. the group ideas, which may also be useful for like my mental health or like for my connections with others or all of those things. And so it's like, I feel like it's a constant conflict. And I hope that we'll get to a point where we kind of make sense of the balance, because I feel like we've kind of thrown ourselves, especially with the internet and like social media and it making us so individual and so like obsessed with ourselves and so independent and like able to create an empire on your own. Like so many people are self-starters of their own like destiny and their own careers and all of these kind of mm-hmm. things. But then we become quite separated, I think, from other generations.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm constantly aware of like that conflict, which I'm not really sure about how to work out.
A lot of what we see on with like online culture and the way things are going is, like you're saying, like there's so much want for individualism that in a lot of ways it's bringing some people closer together and spreading more people apart, because we do talk a lot about as well like the positive feedback loop that people find themselves in because of social media, and how sometimes you can like exist so much within a bubble of people who have similar thought processes to you and all that sort of stuff, especially apps like TikTok, which like feed what you want like so well, where you can't really, you don't really know what else is going on unless you search it out. And I think that that's something that's so interesting just in regards to like the ways in which music has been talked about in the past and people in the spotlight have been talked about in the past, because even though there are these positive feedback loops, there are these like safe spaces for people in the queer community, for people who come from different backgrounds and races and all that sort of stuff, then you go out into the real world and you come across like the Daily Mail and the Sun and all these places that are just like doing the exact opposite of what your positive feedback loop is doing online. And so it's something that like we find really interesting, because most of our episodes we talk about how these celebrities that we really think are good role models or just awesome people are like spoken about really negatively by the media, and how the media is slowly getting sort of taken over by people who are like younger millennials and saw how the media treated people and are slowly trying to change it. But it's a hard job and it's a very long job. And that kind of brings us to like how we even came across you, because I saw your TikTok about how you went to like an event and the Daily Mail did their thing that they always do, which is they included a photo of you in the story and wrote a caption about how you looked. And all of the things were like, oh, like a leggy display, like a tight dress and all that stuff like they've done for decades on end. And all the men were like, looked dapper, looked confident, looked luxurious, whatever. And so, I mean, like, obviously the Daily Mail now is something that you can get anywhere because we have the internet. But also, a lot of people weren't aware of it in America for a really long time. And as somebody who grew up in England wanting to be a musician and like being aware that like at some point you're probably going to wind up on that website, what was it like showing up there and them referring to you like that? And like, how did you handle it at first? And what made you decide to like acknowledge it on TikTok?
Well, I guess you guys have your own versions of Right Wing Media.
Yeah.
So it's nothing new. But yeah, I think it's funny with the Daily Mail, because what's ironic is that I was dressed very much like how a woman should dress, if you think about it. I felt quite feminine. Yeah. I never really wear heels, and I was wearing heels and a dress. And I wonder what they have said if I had turned up looking like this, because it's like the double standard for women is that you can't win either way. It's literally that you dress like they want you to dress, and then you get like objectified for it.
Yes. And oh my God.
I just thought it was really ironic, because I guess the pictures were sold to the Daily Mail, because the photographer there would have probably been getting images. And the irony for me, but I had so many comments on that video which were like dumb and stupid and just like didn't make any sense, were that there was a double standard for men and women, where women were hypersexualized and fetishized because a lot of the women that they spoke about were black women, and they used like terms that just felt very like fetishizing. And then all the men were talked about in very like striking, confident ways. But the irony was is that I was at the launch party for a new collection for a designer, and I was wearing his designs. But
oh my god,
they didn't even comment on the fact that I'm wearing the collection. Oh my god. Like, you chose to comment on my legs when the article is about the fact that Oswald Botang has launched his new collection and his first women's wear, and I'm wearing his first women's wear, and the journalist doesn't even know that I'm wearing the women's wear because he's too busy staring at my legs.
Wow.
It's just so ironic, and it's funny because you don't like, I don't expect to experience that in that space because I've never been in the Daily Mail before. Yeah. And so it was quite like, I don't know, I guess like shocking. Mm-hmm. And then like, I was like, when I looked through it and saw, like unpicked what was actually happening, it was just a bit like, this is just really irritating. Yeah. And I feel like I should acknowledge what's going on here because I know that other people see this, but you know, if you experience something, you can call it out. And because it's me in the picture, I can tell them to shut the fuck up. So talking about my legs, because I could have done anything, but it probably wouldn't have been right. I don't know. Like, yeah. I just think it highlighted a lot that's wrong with our society. And I mean, the Daily Mail are great at highlighting what's wrong with our society.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean we should stop telling them. A lot of the comments that I got were kind of like, what do you expect? And it's a little bit like, men are sexist.
Like men are sexist, so what do I expect? Human.
Yeah, it's like, what, so I'm not supposed to say anything?
Yeah.
Like, next time someone catcalls me, I don't tell them to fuck off, because what do I expect? Boys will be boys. What they're saying is boys will be boys. Literally. And it's like, that is such a like outdated concept for how to deal with issues that, one, are disrespectful, but two, are like counterproductive to like the direction of society and how we want the world to be for people after us.
Yeah.
That like, some people just miss the bigger picture.
Yeah.
and they don't even see between the lines because it's just so far from their experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is like, it's so frustrating because it's like, how can they even know better if they've literally never been exposed to feminist theory or just ideas that are counter to their own? Mm. And this is like what is so upsetting, like that Sarah and I have learned in the course of doing this podcast, is a lot of feminist theory type things you don't learn until you're in college and they're electives, or like they're your chosen path to study that. Like, at least in American school, like growing up, grade school, like never even touch on that. Racism does not exist. Like, like, forget gender theory. Like, racism 101, America's not racist because we already like had to pay for our sins, right? Mm. So it's just so frustrating because it's like, and I think you've said, I want men to engage more heavily in feminism and really see like how their defiance against it only holds both women and men back. Mm. But it's like, how do we even get there if like there's so many people who like, number one, aren't willing to engage, or number two, are like, oh, but like I have female friends, so therefore like I'm a feminist and I'm not the problem, or number three, because of that they think they're like this great person, but then like all of their women friends like they treat with respect, but then when they go to date someone they're just like gaslighting them the whole time.
The
future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I think what's interesting, it kind of comes back to the point that Sara, you made earlier. I think we have to acknowledge that there is a lot more work to do, and regardless of like how many adverts or like how like liberal society looks like it is, actually in reality there's a lot of work that is still to be done, and we have to be willing to like have these difficult conversations. And coming back to the point you said about safe spaces and like your own bubble and like these positive feedback loops, I think what I realized was that I thought everybody thought like me, and like I have lots of male friends who are very like liberal and forward thinking and like feminist and would call themselves feminist, so I thought it was kind of like the odd one out that wasn't like that, which just seems crazy now to me. And what I realized was I actually dated a guy who was from a very different space from me, like not a creative industry, like different world, and he was like a nice guy, but like he was like a 30-year-old man and didn't know what the term misogyny meant.
Oh my God.
Like there were so many things that he didn't know, and we would fight about feminism all the time because obviously like I'm me and he's him. And what I realized is he actually didn't know. He'd actually not heard these things in his circles around his people. And what I realized is that like you can't criticize someone for what they don't know.
Yeah.
And you can't expect someone to be where you are when I've done a degree, I've taken courses, like I've done all of these things that are based around my understanding of feminism or gender theory or whatever it is. And then I'm meeting someone and I'm expecting them to know what I know because I know it. When actually we're all coming from different spaces.
Yeah.
And instead of, and I could have been like, well, you don't know what I'm talking about, so whatever. But that's not like productive. And I think sometimes we're not willing to have conversations with people who think differently from us. And actually that stops like culture from progressing. And I get that like we should have safe spaces. I think we should have safe spaces that are great for us to recharge and connect with people who are like us. But we also have to be willing to have difficult conversations. What are you going to do? Like throw away all your family who are like problematic as hell? Like when isn't the older generation problematic? They all are. Like they're all problematic all the time. And it's like, am I not going to have a relationship with my dad because he says sex is shit? No, I'm going to argue with him for the whole drive about it, because that's what you're supposed to do with people that you care about. You're supposed to like have conversations that are difficult and be willing to like see each other's perspectives in order to come to like some kind of common ground. But if you're not willing to have the conversation in the first place, then you don't really care about changing anything. You just care about where you're at. Like I get it if someone is actively choosing not to understand you or like actively choosing not to learn things. And I think like there's an element of like people have to do their own work. But I really believe that we have to be willing to have those conversations. And I think it kind of also started with my dad, where I would get really upset with him about stuff, and I would get so riled up about something that he's asking me to explain because I think he should already know it. But it's like, if I believe in this thing, why am I not able to articulate it? Like in a calm way, like why am I being overly emotional because it's something that affects me, and I guess maybe that's like my personal trauma. But I think sometimes we have to be able to like separate ourselves from a concept in order to be able to like actually like face it with another person.
Well, I think part of the frustrating thing in like what you're saying is that it's not always easy to articulate. And I think because there's so many layers to it of like, there's so many, I mean, the common term for it now would be like microaggressions, but there's so many like minor little microaggressions along the way. Like even just like a comment in the workplace, like a male commenting on like a female's like attire in the workplace is like technically sexual harassment, like by HR standards. But it's like things that like we just put up with so much, or we're just told to put up with so much, that like we don't even like realize those are these transgressions. And if you've never had the education, like it's so hard to understand these concepts because and like we talked about this a little bit previously, but like it's like these catch-all phrases are like, you know, fuck the patriarchy, or like down with misogyny. It's like, yeah, cool, but like what does that actually mean? Because there's so many different aspects of our life that all these things fall into.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think that while it's really useful having these words to explain things and to be like acknowledged for the oppression that you might experience, I think, yeah, there is an element of like we need to be able to break them down in a way that like is accessible to people who don't have access to maybe higher education or haven't had like that access to choose a course in gender, or would even choose a course in gender, because a lot of men don't even think that that is something that is a space that they would be accepted into. I think we have to be able to have conversations on a level that don't exclude and alienate certain groups. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with being able to like simplify a concept in a way that doesn't dilute the message, but it still allows you to, you know, address it and talk about it in like a balanced way. I would say Bob Marley was a really great example of someone who was able to like use a really, and not so much feminist, but use a big overarching topic about something that he wanted to change and simplify it in a way that made you be able to acknowledge it, but it didn't ever dilute the message of what he was talking about. And I just think that like we have to be able to communicate in that way sometimes, which helps us connect with other people, because I think we're actually becoming we're moving into a more isolated world. And I don't want to be like I'm sympathizing with people who are really problematic, but I think everybody's problematic. I think we all don't know things and do things wrong, or like have different access to different things at different points. And I think maybe this generation has become a little bit less like empathetic towards other people's experiences and we have no time for anyone else. And I think we sometimes have to step outside of, I think that comes from identity politics. Yeah. We have to step outside of ourselves and what our experience is and who, like, my identity is this. So if you're not like understanding it, then like, fuck you.
Yeah,
like, I don't agree with that. I think like, if you're confident in who you are, it's like, okay, you think I look like a boy. I actually don't care. But it's interesting that you say that. Why do you think that? Why can't we have conversations that aren't based around like a trauma response to everything? And I've spoken about it on my podcast with someone else who, like, I think she kind of has a perspective that is seen as quite controversial. Her name is Aisha Akambi. Mm-hmm. And she's an incredible like speaker and thinker, but she does have this like perspective that is like kind of similar to what I'm saying. And I think it is a useful way to think about the world if you are someone who has to engage with random people, which we all do. We can't just be in groups of like people that get us.
No, like that's the thing. And like something again that we're always championing is that like if something's affecting you, you have to talk about it with these people. You can't just ignore it, because if you have people that you care about in your life or people that you have to deal with on a day-to-day basis who constantly are just butting heads with you and disagreeing with you just because they don't know, it's like nothing's ever going to change if you're not going to like open up the discourse. Obviously there are some people that like that discourse is never going to actually happen, but there are more.
You have to choose your battles. Choose your battles.
Yeah, exactly.
Some people you can tell to fuck off.
Exactly, but there are some.
I'm not saying like open your arms to everyone and just like come by our let's hug with the racists. That's not what I'm saying.
Oh yeah, no, 100%. Because like that's the thing, is it's like I feel like a lot of people think that, where like they think like, oh, they want me to like open discourse with everyone. And it's like, no, like you're smart enough. Like we trust you as like strangers, as humans, to like know who is like a worthy person to like have the discussion with, because there are going to be people whose minds you can kind of change. And it is really interesting because we've even gotten feedback from open-minded people who like men who listen to our podcast who will kind of be like, oh wow, like I never thought about this in that way. And it's like, yes, that's all we want, is for what we're talking about to change, like change your viewpoint a little bit so that you talk about it with your friends. And like you mentioned,
and then you can do the work.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And yeah, like you mentioned with the Bob Marley example, and even with like your new album, it's like when you put these ideas to music, it makes it like a much more accessible way for people to come across a conversation that they might not come across or might not search out, where they'll hear a song and they'll be like, oh shit, like I've never thought about it this way. I've never like seen it from this point of view, because for some people, music is going to be something that no matter if they agree with the topic of the lyrics or not, like they're going to respond to a lot better than listening to like a TED talk or somebody on the news or somebody yelling on TikTok or tweeting or whatever. And so I think it's just like spreading these messages through music is such a good way to start a conversation that might not have started otherwise.
Yeah, because there isn't that level of like personal, like, I mean, obviously you have my personal feeling, but you can't like fight with the songs, you know what I mean? Like, I can't be like, you're triggering me and I can't have this conversation, but it can help you provoke thought. And I think that's what I really care about more than anything else. I don't believe that like I can change the world as one person. I think that changing the world happens over a long period of time with lots of people and like lots of social movements. And I know that a lot of the things that I would like to see changed, I might not see in my lifetime, but that doesn't mean I've not been part of the change of something. But I think what I really care about doing with my music is starting that conversation and making another person maybe think about something in a way they hadn't thought about it before, because that's what we can offer other people. If I'm inspired, I would love to inspire other people, and I would love to inspire them to be feminist if I'm going to inspire them to do anything.
Yeah.
I love it.
There's a very strong agenda.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, okay, so speaking like specifically about your music, Mother Sisters Girlfriends is one of those songs that talks about a lot of the boxes that like we're expected to conform to in our daily lives. And you had this like interlude that comes right after the song on your album, and you had these lyrics in there that I just really loved. Like, they immediately jumped out at me. You said, you want to be empowering, you want to be powerful, but you also want to reject the norms that society or patriarchal ideas may impose on you. So how do you do that in a useful way? And then you go on to say, am I selling my image in a way that takes away from the expression of my skill, or am I reclaiming something that has been used to oppress me? And I mean, there's like really like that. Those are deep questions.
Yeah.
And like one of the things that we talk about a lot on this podcast also is this idea of like being sexualized within the like heteronormative male gaze of the patriarchy versus being empowered. I think we're all constantly grappling with this of like, can we truly empower ourselves? Can we truly be empowered and walk the world and be empowered when we're still living within the confines of like a heteronormative patriarchal society?
It's a mindfuck, isn't
so
it?
So much so.
I think that is the conflict, the constant conflict of all women. And some women choose different ways to like make sense of the world. And I think that like that question is a very like, the question that I pose in that's like kind of speech that I do in that interlude, I think is an important one for a lot of women, is that like, you know, like the controversy around Cardi B and like, oh, but she's like hypersexualizing herself, or she's objectifying herself.
Yeah.
Or is she reclaiming something that has been used to oppress her and becoming successful for it? It's like, oh, so like we're supposed to like reject capitalism and reject everything, but I can't, like I still have to exist in the world. And so how can I be successful?
But
you don't want me to use the things that like, it's like you can't win either way. And so like she's decided to capitalize on something that has helped her to become successful. And I think it is very much about like female empowerment and being who she wants to be and expressing herself in a way that she wants to, and also in a way that women are told not to express because of the whole virgin whore thing.
Yeah.
That like you can't be a sexual being and be respected or be powerful, because your power doesn't come in that form, and there are only very strict routes that you can have your power. And like in itself, that is subverting a concept that has been constructed to oppress women. So she is doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, for like someone like my mum's age or my mum's generation, she's just seeing that as like she's objectifying herself, or it's grotesque, or like it doesn't translate in the same way. And I think every woman has to find their way of understanding how to navigate the world. And I said something about in there about being unjudged, and it's like, I don't want to judge any other person about the way they want to live their life. I don't care. You do what you're doing. I'll do what I'm doing. Let's all just mind our business and do it. And like, as long as you're not hurting anyone, we're good. But I think every person has to work that out for themselves. And I think that that is a different route compared, like, depending on who you are. But I think especially as an artist, someone in the public eye and a woman, that is something that I'm always aware of. I always want it to feel like empowering if I am gonna be like overtly sexual or like sexually empowered in the way that I use a music video or have nudity. I want it to be very much about my empowerment and not about like the male gaze. And I think that's something that I always try and bring through in my music or in my like visual additions to my music. The concept that this is very much coming from me and what I want to do, because I'm a sexual being and that's fine. You know, I think there is empowerment in that.
I mean, 100%, because like we talk about this a lot with Megan Thee Stallion, who we like love. But a lot of times it's like the black female rappers in America who are like pushing forward the narrative when it comes to this like sexual empowerment conversation, because they're kind of forced to be put in that position. Like they're going to be sexualized no matter what. But like they're busting down a lot of doors that the white pop girlies are just not. Yeah.
You may as well be in control of your vision, do you know what I mean? And, like, don't have someone else telling you how to be. I can't think of anything worse than, like, some old white man at a major label telling me that I have to get my ass out. Like, please, oh my God.
Literally.
Like, please stop before I slap you. Like, oh my God.
And it's not to say that, like, Dua Lipa isn't making her own creative decisions. It's just that she's not taking the same risks that someone like Megan Thee Stallion is.
Mm.
And something that we've kind of come to the general consensus with, like, Megan is that, like you said, she's doing this on her own accord because she wants to, because she wants to talk about these things, because this is the way that she feels powerful and she feels sexy. Yeah. And in that regard, it is empowerment.
And also every person is different. Yeah. So like some people don't care about sex and not sexually driven and not like overtly sexual people. Yeah. And so they might present themselves in a different way, whereas other people are, and that's fine. If you see like some of your power being in your sexual power, or that's how you feel like strong, or that's how you like to present in the world, then that's up to you, as long as you don't have someone else in your ear telling you to do it. Because I think in any choice you make in life, it has to come from your heart and how you want to express yourself or how you feel most empowered. Otherwise you're not it's about being true to yourself.
Yeah.
Otherwise you're not being true to who you are, and you'll always feel like you're in either someone else's shadow or you're like, I don't know, masked.
Yeah.
by something else. I think something that I always search for is like who I am and who I want to be. And part of that like deconditioning of gender norms and all of those things is trying to work that out. Who would I be without all of these things that are being put on me to be? And I think that that's a confusing journey for anyone. But all you can lead with is intention and with happiness. You want to make sure that in your life you're happy with the decisions you make.
Yeah, definitely. You just said that perfectly. And like Jenna, you and I literally have the same thought. Like I think I would have said the exact same response before. But it's that thing where I think also there is so much of like the patriarchal ideas that we have in our head that we automatically view the feminine form as sexual when that's not necessarily true. It's just how we've been programmed to view women and their bodies. And like some people will be like, oh, well, this is done in an artsy way, so therefore it's not sexual, when like maybe that was the point, or like therefore it's not for men. And it's like, but maybe that was what they were trying to go for, you know?
Well, also like that's part of the male gaze. It's like, well, maybe I'm gay and I'm doing it for women. Like, fuck off. Like, why are we going to assume that like the reason that like I had my boobs out was because it was for men? Maybe I don't care what you think. Like, that is literally heteronormativity. The concept that that's what it's for.
No, literally. Because like, so we did an episode about the female and male gaze, and we were saying how like if the heterosexual male gaze is A, then the female gaze is B through Z, because the female gaze can mean so many different things because it's for so many different people. And it's not even so much because, like, unfortunately, that has to be a very gendered conversation, because that's like what the people who invented these terms made it. But it's like the female gaze has taken on this whole other thing that kind of exists outside of gender at this point, where it's like people automatically might think, oh, Megan Thee Stallion, Cardi B shaking their asses for the male gaze. And it's like, no, it's through like T through R in the alphabet of the female gaze, actually. And it's just like the subverted idea of who actually has ownership of a female body, which is the owner of that body, not the men staring at it. And it's just,
Well, because it's so arrogant, isn't it? It's like so arrogant to assume that that's what I'm doing it for. Men are so basic, like, I could have my left toe out and someone would catcall me. I could have the quarter of my calf out and someone would be like, nice legs. So really, did you think that I made this much effort for you lot when I actually could have just shown you my wrist? Like, it's ridiculous at this point. Like, remember how easily you lot are aroused, and then tell me again that I like chose all of these outfit changes and like did this whole dance routine for you. I wouldn't need to do that if it was literally just for men.
Oh my god.
Oh god.
Literally. Yes. Very. But speaking of men loving to control women's bodies, you did write another song called Play God, specifically talking about politicians. And I think you mentioned that you were specifically inspired by like, or inspired or like you took reference from what was happening like in Alabama with like the anti-abortion laws, and like Texas also has really strict laws, and now Oklahoma. But I was really interested in kind of your take on this, growing up in England, where a place where, of course, it has its own flaws, but like free healthcare or like the national healthcare system, like number one, that's not a worry. Number two, the way abortion is talked about there is very, very different from how much of a political issue it is here in America. So I was just curious about like your experience kind of like watching this unfold from afar.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote Play God when everything happened with Alabama and the government was trying to impose an abortion ban, which wasn't passed, right? It's still not passed. I think it's just other states like Texas and Oklahoma that have passed an abortion ban.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and I think when I wrote that, I was just really angry because I think it's funny being British, because it's not that like it's okay in the UK, but in a very British way, we just don't talk about it. So I don't even remember when abortion was made legal. I just know that if I need to have one, I can have one. And it's we have a national health system, which means that it's free. And everything else is free. And I just go and book it in and I go and do that. And that's something that is just like part of your human rights. And I've never really like thought about it in any other way, although there is still like taboo and shame around the idea of having an abortion. I think it's a much more like hidden way, which I think with most political issues in the UK, it can be like that. It's much more insidious because of our culture and our cultural norms. And I think when I wrote Play God, it was just like, I think it was like something that tipped me over the edge about being angry whenever men try and play God, which is all the time, and that goes on to what we were talking about with women's bodies and control over women's bodies in other ways, in the way they look and the way they dress and who they talk to and how they interact. And everything is a site for contestation, because you can't just exist as a human. There always has to be something that you're doing that means that you're not doing it right, and therefore you're not enough, and therefore you're always insecure and you're always wanting attention, or you're always needing validation. And that is part of the psychological trauma that is social control. And I think with that happening in Alabama, I really wanted to write a song that encouraged women to speak out on that voice of anarchy that they might have inside, because I talk to a lot of women about different things, and because of the way that I am, it often ends up being, I'll meet someone for 5 minutes and we end up having a big conversation about like how they should step into their power, and like, you should definitely dub him and you should definitely do this. And I'm like, literally the worst. And what I notice is a lot of women like have things that they feel and they're not okay with, or they feel very like comfortable to open up to me about certain issues in their life, because they can see that I'm willing to like listen, or that I want to hear what they have to say, but they're not willing to act on it, or they don't know how to act on it, or they don't know how to step into their power yet and act on it. And I think that Play God is very much, half the song is about that, and is about inspiring women to like act on the things that they want to change in their life, and the equality which would allow them to have more freedom in all aspects of their life, but also acknowledging men's roles in that as well. And the second verse is very directed at men and them taking accountability for the part that they play in upholding patriarchal values and upholding the oppression of women. And it's not enough to be like, oh yeah, I know that that happens and it's hard, and oh, I'll walk you home, or like, no, I don't want you to walk me home. I don't want to have another man around me to make me safe from other men. I would like to actually just be safe and be viewed as human.
Literally.
And I think that not enough men acknowledge the work that they need to do on themselves. Toxic masculinity, like, there are so many things that men need to do in order to be, one, better for themselves, but also better for the other half of the world, so that we can all like actually live better lives. And so I think the song is very much about that, and I it felt very controversial when I wrote it, but people seem to be loving it. And I didn't expect that it would. Well, it's funny, I think it's great when you write something controversial, it stirs a lot. And I've had a lot of trolls kind of pro-life trolls, and I guess from the like a global audience, there aren't people that are always going to agree with me. But even going back to what we were saying about safe spaces, I think I used to find trolls really difficult, and it would affect my whole day, and I'd think about what I would say back, and how I would change someone's mind and all of this stuff. Literally. And when you get like a million trolls on a video about abortion, it kind of changes your perspective. And I actually felt like I'm doing something that is going to change minds, because if everybody's agreeing with me, I'm not really doing much. And when the song came out, I was in Texas, and I spoke out about that before I would sing the song when I did live shows. And it's scary, because you're like, I don't know how many people in this audience ferociously don't agree with what I'm saying, you know, as part of their values or identity, if they're like a religious person or something like that. But it's like, I have to be willing to have that conversation. If I believe in something, I have to be willing to fight for it. I can't only believe in it when I say it in front of people who believe in it too, because then I'm not really doing anything for anyone who's unsafe. Like, if I'm safe enough to have that conversation, then I should be having it, because there are people that aren't safe enough to have that conversation, and there are people that like are having to travel so far to have an illegal abortion, even like in Ireland and places. And so like, I know that that's the case in America, in states in America, and that's so scary. And being in Texas, having released a song and realizing that if I had grown up here, I wouldn't be afforded that human right, was just really surreal and really scary for me.
That, like, you just hit on so many important factors of this. And I feel like also just what you were saying before of like, if you're passionate about something and like something matters to you, like you have to be comfortable speaking about it no matter how scary it is. And like also how in England, you just don't talk about it. People just go about their business, do what they need to do, and you don't talk about it. And I feel like in America, because there is so much turmoil and so much conversation and so much of like these old politicians trying to handle people's uteruses that they've never met, I think it's really important and really powerful to have artists from other countries covering these topics and singing about them and clearly being affected by what's going on. Because again, it's like, I feel like a lot of people's idea of America is like, oh, you know, the American dream, like anything can happen there, blah, blah, blah. But like, there's so many places in America that have backwards people in power or just can be quite backwards in their views and things. Because I mean, I've lived in England on and off over the past like 10 years. And it's just so interesting, because I feel like so many men over here, some like that I've come across will think that they understand feminism. They think they understand these issues. And it's like, okay, but like, you probably don't have the conversations with your female friends that like my male friends in America do, because the second you get an abortion in America, you become an activist. Like, it's not even a choice, really, because if you've gotten one, you understand how important it is for other people to have that opportunity to be able to get one. And when there constantly are these people trying to be like, no, you can't do that, you have to speak out about it. And so to have artists, like I said, from a country where it's just like, okay, nobody, that's, it's not like even a topic that seems to be up for debate. I feel like it's so important because the conversation is spreading, and the not only through music, but like through that being able to like see how much other people are like, you guys are kind of like, you're wrong, like this is none of your business. And I so it's just like really powerful. And the song, I think you did it incredibly, and like the way in which like you're singing about it and wrote about it, and it's just like, there's so many ways people could fuck it up. And it's like, and so it's really, you, but like, you know what I mean, like it's so possible, but the song is so well done, and I think it definitely could be such a good conversation starter for these sort of things.
No, I totally get what you mean, and I think that it has to be personal, and it has to come from a place of like understanding for a topic if you're gonna talk about it. And I think that's so important when you're writing. You can't be telling other people's stories, but you have to be able to just be raw, honest, and open. That's the point of art, do you know what I mean? It allows a level of vulnerability that we're not always allowed in life, and then therefore it allows others to experience it in a way which might not be accessible in other spheres of the world. And yeah, it's amazing that Play God can reach places where it might start a conversation where it's really needed. And I think it's still needed here. I think we still need to change minds. Like with all things, we can't look at them at face value. And you know, you can't be obsessed with killing a life, but not willing to help someone who's then going to have to bring up a child for 20 years of their life.
Literally.
And not maybe not be emotionally or financially ready to do that. I feel very strongly about that. I think that you're bringing up a human who's going to affect the world. It's going to affect every person they interact with. You know, if you want the world to be a better place, then let's bring up humans in great ways. You know, let's bring up people who are going to affect the world in an amazing way because they've had good childhoods and they've had balanced lifestyles. And like, you know, it's just about being thoughtful in the way that we do things and intentional. And I think everybody should have that choice with how they lead their life or what they want to do for the next 20 years of their life. You know, we act like that's not a long time, but that's, you know, that could be your whole career or your whole life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's a really important topic, and I hope that we get to a place where we're not talking about it anymore, but for now we are. And so I would like to continue advocating for it. It's funny how when you normalize something in your mind, it then becomes not very tabooed. I was quite scared to talk about abortion when I wrote the song. And I've talked about it so much that I like don't even think about it now. And it's really funny because I thought more people would have issues with it. But Play God has been played loads on Radio 1, and I've done interviews on the radio, and the BBC aren't really allowed to be political. That's like part of their thing, that they're supposed to be politically like neutral. And maybe it's because this radio DJ is a white male, a successful white male. But he's just out here talking about how the song's about pro-abortion and like Poppy's talking about women's rights, and like it's amazing. And I didn't think that would even happen. I didn't envision that happening, and I thought that like it would be so taboo, and it is taboo, but it's only taboo until we talk about it, and then it just becomes normal. And the problem is that we don't talk about it here. So yeah, it's a human right and you're allowed to get one, but if you have family members that are pressurizing you in other ways, or partners, or whatever it is, or you're from a deeply religious family, then you might not feel in control of your destiny, and we have to like break away from the constraints of what other people think of us. We have to be able to make choices ourselves, and that's so important, especially as women.
I think that that's really important, and again, you just keep hitting all these incredible points, especially about the fact of like, just because something is allowed and legal doesn't mean that like everybody is going to just be able to go out and get it done, because there are other hurdles in the way. And I just mean, like we've said throughout this whole conversation, I mean, this, your whole album is covering topics that are important to cover, and that I think a lot of artists have either shied away from or kind of like half-ass done music about throughout time. And so I think it's really incredible, because Jenna and I do talk a lot about how the idea of what pop music is changing, the idea of what a pop star can be and look like is changing.
And that's quite a big thing for me. I really wanted, like, one of, I think, my goals, which I haven't really thought about as much now, was I really wanted to be able to write songs that politically engaging, but that could be listened to in a commercial space, because it's like, the same thing that we were talking about before. I can't really affect change if I'm only doing it in this tiny niche. Mm-hmm. Actually, which is funny that you say that, is that what I want has happened. I want to be able to write a song that's deeply political and it be played on radio 1-3 times a day on the breakfast show, and people are having their breakfast and they're talking about abortion. You know,
it's incredible.
And they're having arguments about abortion. That's exactly what I want. I want to cause chaos in the household, and my dreams are coming true.
Oh my goodness.
That's so incredible though, because like it's so important, and it's so incredible just how much, like I said, the idea of a pop star has just completely subverted what it used to be, and the ideas of like the Spice Girls and Britney Spears and all these kind of cookie cutter white girls, and now anybody really can do it. And yeah, so I'm just really excited for our listeners to get to listen to your album and really like have the moment that Jenna and I had with it, because it's just like very much everything that we care about and yell about. So it's incredible when there's music that we can now send our listeners to go listen to and be like, hey, if you like want to slowly get your maybe like questionable friends into having conversations, give them this album.
Play them this album. I love that. Please give all your problematic friends my album. That's gonna be my new PR statement. Oh my god. This is the album for all your problematic friends and your problematic dad and your homophobic aunt. Like, just give it to all of them. Don't even say anything. Just tell them to listen to it. Yes, I love that.
Oh my God. Well, with all this being said, Poppy, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. It's really been lovely to chat with you. Lovely to hear a different perspective from our own and to kind of like open our minds even a little bit more. So thank you so much for joining us. And for everyone listening out there, we will have links to Poppy's socials and the albums. You guys can go check out more. And yes, thank you, Poppy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can't believe we have a new bestie.
I love turning our podcast conversations into like new best friends. Oh, such a lovely conversation for us. Oh my goodness. I hope all of you guys really enjoyed that. I'm sure you did, because it was a wonderful conversation for us. Love when we can have different perspectives and open our minds a little more.
Yeah, I know. And it was just like so interesting and so incredible that, again, TikTok always doing the most for us in regards to like bringing people into our world. But it's just like truly when I say that like this album is an album you can give to whoever you care about that likes music and might not really know how to talk about this stuff. If music speaks to the people in your life more so than any other conversation way to like discuss these things that you care about, give them this album. It's truly incredible. And I'm not just saying that because we just talked to her. Like, it's a very good album, and she puts all of like our podcast thoughts into song in like the most incredibly eloquent way.
Next thing you know, we're gonna be hiring artists to write songs based on our podcast themes. Just to like plant the seed a little bit more, just to like slip it in, be like, okay, but what if you wrote a song about the female gaze?
What if you wrote a song about hands?
That oh my it. God.
Like, can you just imagine where, like, guys, the new TikTok rumor is name three songs is putting out industry plants.
Goals, honestly, goals.
But yeah, we hope you enjoyed this conversation. We hope you enjoyed this new version of things that we're working on. We are in the midst of this new venture of the Name Three Songs brand to bring you guys in more to like the artists that we're into that we think share viewpoints and ethos with us in the Name Three Songs community, because it's important to get to talk to these people, and we've gone so far up the ass of psychology that we can't just have them on our Sunday episodes. But we gotta get them involved somehow, because it's important to get their viewpoints, because really without them we wouldn't have the podcast. So
yes, of course.
So yeah, so come shoot us a message, a DM, a comment on the post about this episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts, or if you have any suggestions of other artists you think we should check out and try and get involved in the conversation, we would love to hear your thoughts on that. So thanks for joining us on this midweek episode of Name Three Songs. We hope you enjoyed it, and until next time, listen to our Sunday episodes and educate yourself some more.
And if you want to find out anything more about Poppy or anything else we reference in this episode, we will have those links over on namethroughsongs.com.